Welcome to episode 9 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. It's Randy Wilkins, and I'm joined as always by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Can't complain. We just talked about the Kendrick Lamar diss and how people are responding. We'll do that for our other podcast because we have a special guest, the great Mike Petriello from MLB.com and Baseball Savant. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, and that is too kind of you guys to say. Thank you for having me.
Any thoughts on the Kendrick Lamar diss before we get going?
I would not want to embarrass myself or your listeners getting deeply into my thoughts on that. So no, I'll leave those unsaid.
All right, cool. We talked about this on Twitter, but I'm sorry that you don't have the guitar background for this episode, but hopefully we'll get you back on and then we can have the guitar in the background.
Yeah, no, for those who haven't seen it, it's like a real Gibson Les Paul that's painted like a baseball, and it's mostly fun to have as a Zoom background. It's very fortunate to have it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So we're very thankful to have you on this episode. We thought it'd be a great idea to have you since we're 1 month into the season, and this is when trends start to emerge, and obviously there's a long baseball season ahead of us, but there's an opportunity to start thinking about where some teams are headed, and specifically the Yankees. So we wanted to have you on just to have a kind of month recap into what the Yankees look like, what they can be, and all that fun stuff. But before we get into Yankee specific stuff, because you're so connected with Baseball Savant and how important it's become, not just for fans and the media, but I believe MLB teams as well. We wanted to ask you right off the bat so we can inform fans who either don't really use Baseball Savant or not aware of it, as well as others or those that do frequent the site a lot. We'd love to know what some of the stats are that you think are really important in evaluating hitters and pitchers that go beyond the percentile rankings, because obviously there's so many screenshots and people always turn to those. But when you're looking at trends, when you're looking at performance, what are some of the stats that stand out to you that don't fit into those percentile rankings?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, you know, for those who don't know, Baseball Savant is the MLB clearinghouse for all the Statcast metrics, right? So all the 30 teams get the raw Statcast data. They can create whatever they want. We sort of act as like the 31st team to make it available for fans, supply broadcasters, you know, so a lot of the stuff you'll see on Yes Network, like they get from us. And it's largely, you know, sometimes about player analysis, yeah, but it's also about trying to explain the story of the game and why do teams act the way they do, and, you know, why do they like this guy hitting 200 more than this guy hitting 250 or something like that. So it depends on what story you're trying to tell, right? If I'm looking at pitchers, for example, a lot of times I get interested in pitch shapes and pitch types and the way his pitches move, right? Like, does his pitch get fastball, get a lot of vertical break? Does it not? How much is Clay Holmes' sweeper sweeping, for example? How much does it play off in the other direction with the sinker? Like, I think that's where pitching analysis is mostly at right now. Not obviously that results don't matter. Of course they matter, but it's pretty interesting to just be able to see like how guys pitch the way they do, how they can improve themselves. And you have pitchers talking about this now, right? In ways I would have never expected. Like, you know, Adam Ottavino used to be kind of an outlier in the sense of he's a bit of a pitching genius with his lab and everything. And now a lot of guys just talk about it like it's totally normal. It's wild to me how quickly that's changed. And, you know, for hitters, like, are they hitting the ball hard, right? What pitches are they swinging, missing at? Do up a heat map that says, oh yeah, real big hole up top. Like, I was just looking at, not a Yankee, but Alec Bohm from the Phillies is off to a great start. And part of what you could see is he's really tightened up his swing decisions. Like, last year, he was sort of swinging at everything. And now it's very clear, like, damage down and in, or down in the middle. That's what he's trying to get to. And there's really no shortage of stories you can tell. It's really like, what are you trying to use your use case for, right? Is it broadcast? Is it I'm trying to come up with analysis? That's what I think is cool about it. You can sort of shape it to meet whatever you need you have.
I wanted to ask a question. So obviously, we're still very, very early in the season. How long does, what do you say it takes to develop, you know, good statistical analysis for both hitters and pitchers? Because, you know, Randy and I were talking in our last episode, but you know, the Yankees played the Brewers this past weekend. Anthony Rizzo was off to a really slow start. He has a really good weekend, and then he had like a 131 WRC plus or whatever it was. So like, how long would you say it takes to, you know, develop a good sample size for both hitters and pitchers?
Yeah, I think I saw Jordan Montgomery's ERA like tripled last night, which is what can happen. You know, it's funny, it's early, but it's not as early. I was looking at Anthony Volpe this morning and I thought I made a mistake because the query I did came back with 140 plate appearances. I'm like, there's no way. And then I looked at him like, oh no, he's pretty far into the season now. So to answer that question, it's very different based on what kind of metric, right? If you're looking at fastball velocity, like two pitches, you know, you don't need a lot of evidence to know that like Josh Hader throws hard and Kyle Hendricks does not, you know, running speeds like that. A lot of this stuff, I hate the phrase like stabilizes, but that's kind of where everybody goes to. It depends on what you're looking at, right? I think like barrels are like 60 batted balls or something. I don't remember them exactly, but I would say for some of the underlying metrics pretty quickly, and for some of like the overall stat lines, like, people don't like to hear that for a couple months into the season, there's more value in the preseason projections than what you're actually seeing right now. And I think intuitively that should make some sense, right? Like, you got guys who still have like a 450 batting average on balls in play, or have had bad defense behind them on the mound or whatever. But people love to think that what they see in April is what the player is now. And it's like, well, there's still seasons before that. You still have to take into account the projections. And I still do up until about the All-Star break or so.
So speaking of projections, you were one of the people in the offseason that thought pretty highly of the Yankees. And one of your main talking points on that was it's very simple. They have two of the best hitters in baseball hitting back to back in the lineup. And the projections for the Yankees were pretty favorable, I would say, across the board. But you were very vocal in your article on MLB.com about your belief in what the projections were telling you. And so far, so good, I would say, for the Yankees getting off to a really good start, top 3-4 record in the sport, blah, blah, blah. But one point of contention amongst Yankees fans, and we've talked about it a lot since the season has started, is the inconsistency of their offense. And it's good. It's statistically good, but then when you watch the games, you're like, what's happening? Like, I never see the good part of this offense unless they're in Milwaukee and score 30 runs in two games. So I'm curious what your take on the Yankees offense is up until this point. Obviously, it's inconsistent, but what are some of the things that you've seen that kind of contribute to this inconsistency? Do you think it's a good offense so far? Like, what are your thoughts on where the Yankees lineup is right now?
Yeah, for sure. Just to go back to the winner for a second, like, you guys both are far more in touch with Yankee Twitter than I am, but I observe, and I couldn't believe the number of people who were sort of overlooking that they'd gotten Juan Soto. And it's like, it's literally Juan Soto. It's going to be on the Yankees. Yeah. That's great. When I think about consistency, this was really surprising to me when I looked this up this morning. Generally, I think of performance with runners in scoring position, right? Because it's very hard to predict, and teams can get really good at it to really bad at it, even within the span of a season. You know, I don't want to say like there's zero skill, but it's just so much more randomness than people really want to give it credit to. And so that was my first thought was, yeah, they're kind of inconsistent despite the fact that they're top six or whatever at OPS plus, like, they're generally playing well. I assume that they're not doing great there, and they're actually doing pretty well. I think they're like top five in runners in scoring position OPS or whatever it was. And that was surprising to me because that is not what I expected to happen. And I guess it comes back to, you know, what do you expect consistency to be? Is that scoring exactly 4.2 runs every single night? I know they've gotten shut out a couple times. I know they've had like a couple of huge blowouts in their favor, although some of that was against position players pitching. So I don't worry about that too much. I think where it comes back to is the offense is performing, I would say, sort of where I expected, but the shape of it is like wildly different than I expected. You know, I thought Soto would come in and be great. He has. I didn't really have high expectations for Rizzo or Stanton, and they've been like, okay. Obviously, we thought Judge would be better. I think, and Randy, correct me if I'm wrong, you have been kind of the captain of the actually Gleyber Torres is good train over the last couple years. And yes. He hasn't been this year.
I always I wasn't always, though. There, when he was Glaber the shortstop, I was very much like, get this guy out of here. But then I went back and then was kind of like leading that charge. I'm still leading it, even though he hasn't been good.
And I've been with you. I don't think he's a superstar or anything, but like every year, a solidly consistent above average player who, you know, shouldn't be the best hitter on your team. But if he's like the fourth or fifth best hitter on a championship team, like I'm fine with that. And what's happening with him this year, at least so far as I can tell, is it's just garbage contact. You know, I think I read somewhere he's got like two balls hit further than 350 feet or whatever, which is just insane this early in the season. So this kind of goes back to what I was saying about projections. Like, unless there's evidence that he's hurt, which I'm not aware of, I think he'll be fine. I'm not going to go nuts over a bad month when he's had, what, three or four solid seasons in a row. So none of that is your original question. The inconsistency is just because you're getting weird starts from some guys where it's like, some guys are better than I thought they'd be. Some guys are worse than I thought they'd be. I assume that will all sort itself out. My main question primarily is, I don't know if Aaron Judge is healthy or not. I'm very surprised by his start. We know he's had two somewhat serious injuries in the last year. That is a question that I can't answer, and that's what I'm most interested in.
We'll get into some of that a little later. I wanted to ask you, you know, just talking about offense as a whole, but we're recording this on Thursday morning, and the league-wide OPS average is 696, below 700. Obviously, offense is down across the board. Do you have an opinion of why that might be? I know a lot of times people want to talk about, did MLB deaden the balls, or how's the ball acting this year? But do you have an opinion of just why offense might be down?
Well, I have seen some of that, and I'm not sure exactly like which report you're referring to, so maybe don't take this one the wrong way. A lot of people are doing it wrong, where they compare the first month of the season to full seasons of last year. Like, offense always goes up when it gets warmer. So if you're going to compare the first month of this year, you can really only compare it to the first month of previous years, which I assume people who know what they're doing are doing. So if it's down a little bit, it's hard to say so far. Everybody loves to talk about the ball like every single year. And I find the conversation so tedious at this point, because like every single year it comes back up again. And trust me, as someone who, you know, helps run a site where we rely on expected stats and what things you're expecting to happen, when that changes, it's frustrating to me. It doesn't make me happy. So I don't think there's any actual real evidence of any of that happening so far this year. I wouldn't even imagine looking at it for the first 2 months of the season, because there's so much small sample and weather, and, you know, pitchers are still pitchers. So I think you got to wait a little bit longer to really draw any real conclusions there.
So one person that got out to a really great start this year and was and still is my like kind of bold prediction, with Anthony Volpe being a top five shortstop. And he made me look like a genius for a couple of weeks, and now I look like an idiot, which is totally fine. I'm used to it. So what do you think of Volpe's season so far? I think that I've talked with Chris about this. It seems like when he's kind of gone into the slump that he's had, or I guess he had, I don't really know if he's starting to break out of it or not. We're kind of like on that like line right now. It feels like his swing path has changed, which led to not as great contact as he had at the beginning of the season, and he started chasing a little bit more. But overall, what are your impressions of Anthony Volpe's first month in his second season?
Well, the first thing that stands out to me, and I know you were asking about him on offense mostly, but on defense, I know he won the Gold Glove last year, but the defensive metrics disagreed with him very much. The DRS thought he was great, and StatCast thought he was okay. And I think right now he's like top three in StatCast defensive metrics for shortstop. Mm. So whatever he has done differently, or whatever the metric views differently, StatCast now kind of agrees that the defense is really good, which is great, because that gives you a pretty good baseline, and it gives you a lot of run, you know, if the offense isn't there. I think, you know, he talked a lot about swing changes, and we hear that from so many guys like all the time. It's sort of hard to pay attention to it too closely, but when you're a talented first year player and everybody wants to know what you're going to do to improve in the second year, I think what he did, you know, made sense. I don't know that I would say so much he's slumped so much as it is like the first 15 games or whatever of the season went so wildly perfectly for him that it was never reasonable to expect that to maintain. Like that couldn't happen. So you know, if you'd asked me this question on April 13th or whatever, I would have said, oh yeah, he's going to be worse over the next 2 weeks. Like, that's just how this is going to go. And I think what's happening now is sort of what you alluded to, right? The swing path seems like it has changed, a little more contact, a little less quality of contact, but because of the type of player he is, I mean, you know, not that he's not strong, but he's not obviously Stanton or Judge. You're not looking for him to be a 35 homer guy. You want him to rope those line drives and make contact, use his speed. And I think if he settles into being, even if he's just an average hitter, that'll be a big win. And I know for a lot of people, they'll say, I'm sorry, didn't my rookie shortstop go 20-20 last year? And you're telling me he was below average? But you guys know as well as anybody, the on-base wasn't there. The OPS wasn't there. Especially down the stretch, he struggled a lot. So just to get to an average hitter, a 100 OPS with a very good glove, that's a borderline star level player. And I think, you know, he's not going to be the guy you saw for the first 2 weeks, but he's not going to be the guy who struggled for a little bit after that. I'm in on him as like a 10% above average hitter, which I think is a tremendous win for him.
With Volpe in particular, a lot of Yankee fans were freaking out when Aaron Boone decided to move him up to from the bottom of the order to leadoff spot. And they think that that's why he's struggling now. Like, how much, if any, stock do you put into players performing better or worse if they move in the lineup spot? Because I'm one of those, it's like, I don't think that matters at all. Maybe it can get into some guys' heads, but, you know, just from talking with Volpe, I don't think that's the reason. So I'm curious from just like a statistical analysis perspective, like, do you put any stock into that whatsoever?
I won't say zero stock, because it's always important to remember that, you know, players are people, they are humans, they are comfortable where they are or aren't. This comes up a lot in Atlanta where, you know, just from a purely numbers point of view, you probably don't want to have Acuna leading off and always having nobody on base, right? He's a power hitter, have somebody on base, but he's made it pretty clear that's where he's comfortable, you know, and whatever stats gain you might get from moving him somewhere else, if that, you know, if you lose that or more by making him as a person less comfortable, then you probably don't want to do that. For Volpe, I don't know the exact date of the lineup change, but I'm guessing it might correlate a little bit with kind of what I said before, which is that he played so unbelievably well for 2 weeks, and then he was never going to keep that up no matter where he hit in the lineup. So I think that's a little bit of causation and correlation are not the same thing. And I'm pretty sure this is something I've seen at least Randy, if not many other Yankee fans, talk about for years. This team has never really had a good leadoff hitter option, right? Like, they've tried so many different guys, you know, LeMahieu and I think Rizzo for a little bit, and Judge, and Volpe's profile, I think, makes sense. Like, if you can get him to be that guy, I look up and down the rest of the roster, who else do I really want there? I think him, if he can do it, great. But you can't really say, well, because he moved and then he stopped hitting 450 or whatever, it's because he moved. It doesn't really ever work that way.
Right. Yeah. I strongly agree with that. Chris and I are in the same camp. It also, people also bring this up a lot, especially recently with Judge struggling, that, you know, it's because of Stanton. And it's like, I don't think Giancarlo Stanton has much to do with these at bats. So I do want to get to Judge, but I have one more question about Volpe, and it's not necessarily about him specifically, but you brought up something that I found really interesting. And it's always this kind of debate between actual performance and expectations of performance. So saying that, you know, even if Volpe is an average hitter with a gold glove, actual gold glove level defense, that's a borderline star player. And I would agree, but I think a lot of Yankees fans would say, well, that would be disappointing because he's not OPSing like 3 million or something like that. So can you talk a little bit about what, in your opinion, and just based off the data that you always come across, why would an average hitter, let's say, but with high level defense, be considered a star level player, even though, you know, it might, to the eye or to like a general baseball fan, they might say that that's not enough?
Well, I think the expectations, I feel like we got spoiled for a couple years there. When you think about some of the high level, let's just talk about batters for a second, right? Prospects who came up like Acuna, like Juan Soto, Gunnar Henderson, right? And they kind of just came up and they raked right away. They're great. And there was a lot of talk, like accurate talk, I believe, about how younger players are getting more prepared sooner because, you know, if college ball is improved or, you know, scouting's improved or whatever. And then it was a really good reminder this year that when you saw some of the young guys come up and, you know, not flop because they'll be back and I think they'll be fine, but it didn't really work out for Jordan Walker, didn't really work out for Jackson Holiday, a couple other guys, like baseball's really hard. It's like really, really hard at the highest level. And you can't expect a young player to come up right away and be a superstar. And I think you saw it with Volpe last year. There are a lot of things he did well, and there are a lot of things he needed to improve upon. And at the end of the day, whether he has lived up to those expectations, it sort of depends on how you want to define that. If you think he has to hit 300 to be a good player, and that's all you care about, then he's probably going to be a failure, right? If you're interested in him as a well-rounded player who gives you value in a lot of different ways, I think he's going to be pretty good, right? I think he's going to be a good hitter. I don't think he's going to be a great hitter. I think he's going to steal double-digit bases. And it seems like he's going to play plus defense at the most important, you know, spot on the field. I think well-rounded players tend to get a little undervalued in the sense of like you do a lot of things well, but you're maybe not like great at anything. And who knows, maybe he will be a great defensive shortstop. Maybe that's what we're seeing. But I think if you don't have that one like hugely loud tool that people point to, you tend to get a little undervalued because being great at a lot of things is really valuable, but maybe not quite as sexy, you know, not quite as electric as being the guy with Stanton level power or whatever, even if there's a lot of other flaws in his game.
Going back to the leadoff conversation for a second, for those who are wondering, since Volpe went to the leadoff spot, he has a 77 WRC plus and 94 plate appearances. So obviously just hasn't been good in the leadoff spot, 301 on base and not really hitting the ball hard at all, an 87 mile per hour average exit velocity. So maybe there's something there, but we'll see moving forward. With Judge, obviously a lot of people have been wondering if he's hurt, if he is washed, you know, how the Yankee fans get. But it is weird just like looking at his numbers because he's still like crushing the ball. He's not hitting the ball as hard as he was last year, but he's still hitting the ball harder than most players in the sport. Have you come up with any reason or do you have an opinion of just like what is behind his weird start so far? It seems like a lot of times pitchers are attacking him low and outside, like what they were doing and what they're still doing with Giancarlo Stanton, just because I don't know if he has the flexibility anymore to get those pitches, but I don't think Judge has that issue. I don't know. I mean, he has told us almost like every day now when we ask, and you know, he gets pissed off when we ask, but we ask if he's healthy and he says yes every single time. But he did miss some time in spring training with a core injury. You know, he said that he has to have constant maintenance on his toe, which he thinks is going to continue for the rest of his career. But, you know, he says he's healthy. So the only thing that we can do as reporters is, you know, believe him because we're not in the training room and we're not talking to the trainers, unfortunately. So what do you think is behind his start so far?
Yeah, I hate to speculate on someone's health because I agree with you. We just don't know. But when he came back from the toe at the end of last year, he was still pretty good, as I remember. So it's hard to say what that's about. But when I see a player like this and then the performance isn't there, the very first thing I do is I look at swing and miss or strikeouts. And I say, okay, is this guy just swinging through everything? Is his timing off? And that's not really true here. I think his strikeout rate is actually slightly better than last year. I think he's making a little more contact. And what's happening here, as far as I can see, is his opposite field rate is way up. And I have a pretty hard time believing that's a strategy. I mean, I don't know, maybe it is. How many times have you heard guys talk about, you know, use all fields and real kind of old school way of talking? So I haven't spoken to him. Maybe that is the strategy. I don't know. But when I see a guy like this making enough contact, but not making as much high quality contact and going opposite field a lot, it does seem to me that maybe his mechanics are off in ways that aren't easily visible. You sort of alluded to maybe getting attacked more low and away. And so maybe he's trying to go with what he's given and that's not working out as well. I'm pretty confident he's going to be fine unless it turns out he is concealing some injury we don't know about, right? Like the talent is still there. The hard hit is there. I sort of refuse to believe the idea that he just forgot how to hit over the winter. You know, I think we've seen him get into these funks before too. I can't remember what year, but it was maybe his second or third year. He went like 6 weeks not hitting at all, or I can't remember the details, but it's not like this has never happened. When you're a big man, your mechanics get out of whack. Everybody will keep asking about that core injury, I think, until he proves otherwise. So while I totally respect why he doesn't want to be asked about it, I also think it's totally understandable why you will keep asking about it until something changes.
Yeah, I'm okay. So this is probably the second week in a row where I'm a little surprised by a certain metric, just because, or stat. Our last episode, I was surprised when we did the episode after the Milwaukee series that the Yankees were number one in hitting with runners in scoring position. And now I'm a little surprised. I've been looking at Judge's heat map, but I'm a little surprised that his opposite field rate is up, because part of the eye test and this heat map is basically telling us he can't even like get to that pitch right now. So it's really interesting that he's hitting to the opposite field more than usual, but it also feels like it's coupled with not as great contact. So it's kind of enigmatic to me right now. It just feels, when you watch the games, it's especially this Baltimore series. I mean, it's been very obvious what their plan of attack is. Just saw stuff away and he has like no shot at it. It doesn't even matter what pitch type it is. It's just, he's just like flailing at it. It's odd, because it feels like, you know, what's going to happen, you know, how they're going to attack him. And it seemingly comes across that there isn't an adjustment being made. So I'm not really sure what to make of like this stretch for him, because when he does make good contact, it feels like on the in, like out over the plate or like a little bit in, he's hitting the ball hard. But now that you bring it up, it does feel like he hasn't really pulled the ball that much. And Chris and I have talked a lot about pulling the ball in the air for a lot of hitters. And now that you bring it up, I'm beginning to remember that if he does make contact, he's not really pulling the ball in the air with any kind of consistency.
Yeah, but you know what's confusing to me is there's a handful of guys in the league where that's the only way they can get power, right? Nolan Arenado, Isak Paredes, a couple other guys. When they hit home runs, it's because they pulled it in the air, because they're just not huge, strong, top-end power guys. Judge is, and we've all seen him go opposite field for power before. So it's like, for some guys, I'd see going oppo more and say, no, huge problem, this can't last. For him, the problem is just it's different than what he was doing before. It's not like I think he can't make strong enough contact to get it out in right center. You know, he's the most powerful hitter in baseball, or close to it. For me, the warning sign here is just that is so different than what he did before. And he was successful before and he's not successful now, you know? So that's like the number one thing to eyeball for me.
All right. All right. So we've covered the Yankees offense in pretty good in super detail. So when we come back from this break, we'll get into the Yankees pitching and talk with Mike about some of the things that he's noticed in the first month of the season. We'll be right back after this break. And we're back. It's Randy, it's Chris, and our special guests on this episode, Mike Petriello from MLB.com and Baseball Savant. So, Chris, I know you had a question regarding one of the Yankees starters.
Yeah, so, you know, Carlos Rodon, I think it's fair to say that he was awful last year. I go back to his last start in Kansas City, didn't get an out, gives up 8 runs, turns his back on Matt Blake. It was a whole ordeal to end the season, but he's been good so far. And it's interesting to see the reasons why he's been good. You know, he's added a cutter. He was basically a two-pitch pitcher before the season, fastball slider. He's added a cutter. He's throwing this cutter basically the same amount of time as the slider. But I think it's interesting to me that, you know, when the Yankees signed him out of San Francisco, he was one of the best strikeout pitchers in the sport. I think he actually led all of MLB in Ks per nine. And this year, he's not really getting many swing and miss. Right now, he's in the 27th percentile in whiff percentage, and he's slightly below average in K percentage. So I'm interested to hear your perspective on Carlos's start. Do you feel like it's sustainable right now? He has a, let me see, he has a 2.48 ERA, and it doesn't feel like he's been like that dominant. Maybe it's because he's not, you know, registering a lot of swing and miss. His slider was really good in Milwaukee in his last start. He's actually going to be pitching today against Baltimore, so maybe this conversation is pointless by the time this comes out. But I'm curious to know what your perspective is on Carlos's start so far.
Yeah, it's really funny to me because, as you noted, year one was a disaster, right? Didn't pitch well, was hurt, had some, you know, bad public moments, right? And you could easily see this being, oh God, is this how it's going to be for the next couple of years? And a month into the season, aside from Juan Soto, I would say he has been maybe the most important Yankee to their success. And the reason I say that is because, A, team traded away a ton of pitching in the offseason, obviously. And then the best pitcher in the sport, Gerrit Cole, gets hurt. And so before it was, man, it would be really nice if Rodon and Cortez could step it back up. And then Cole goes down and King gets traded. And all of a sudden it's, no, we need Rodon. We need him to step up. And to his credit, he has. And I feel like the vibes were so bad last year that maybe he's not getting enough credit for that, because even though you're right, he's not as dominant as he was with San Francisco, he's been pretty good. And I think everybody's maybe a little fearful because the strikeouts are down. And I think what's happening there to some extent, probably two things, right? Number one, the fastball when he was in San Francisco was something like the best fastball in baseball. I think I might have actually written a piece that called it that at some point. And it's been good, but I think maybe not quite as dominant. And he's added this cutter, which it makes a lot of sense, because what cutters generally do is, you know, they sort of fill in the movement gap between a fastball and a slider, but they're not often like dominant strikeout pitches. And so I think what he's doing is, you know, not necessarily hunting for strikeouts so much as he's trying to be a more productive pitcher overall. And I don't look at him and I say that I've got a great deal of confidence he's going to be the absolutely dominant Cy Young level pitcher he was with the Giants. And if that's what the Yankees paid for, then I guess that'll be a disappointment, because I don't really see that happening. But I think you think about your expectations entering this year, and if he had gotten off to a bad start this year, I mean, that's it. You don't come back from that, I don't think, with Yankee fans. And he's been pretty good. And I think he does deserve a lot of credit for that, because, you know, without him, this rotation, I think, looks very differently without Cole.
Those are good points. Yeah, we've talked about his pitch selection this year, and I was advocating, because I was thinking more about the swing and miss, that he needed to use his slider more, and he ended up doing that in Milwaukee and had his best strikeout performance so far in the season. But it makes sense that the cutter is kind of like that in-between pitch for him to get them off the other two priority pitches that he has. So that's a good point. I guess we can talk about this a little bit in context of Clay Holmes and the Yankees bullpen overall. And this is something we've talked about a lot, and Yankees fans have definitely caught on to it. But can you tell me a little bit just in general about the importance of swing and miss? I feel like that's an obvious question to ask and it has an obvious answer, but the Yankees are still performing pretty well with their lack of swing and miss. But moving forward, why, if you do think this at all, is it important for the Yankees to start getting that back as they move forward into the season?
Yeah, I almost view it as more important out of the bullpen, at least the late innings of the bullpen, not like the, you know, Luke Weaver innings filler type, but more important for the back end of the bullpen to swing and miss than even the starters, right? Obviously, any pitcher wants to miss bats. But what happens is when you allow for contact, even if you're trying for soft contact, there's a chance that ball's going to fall in, right? It could be bad luck. It could be a bad hop. It could be whatever. And if that happens while you're a starter, you can kind of paper over that over the course of five or six innings. If it happens in the ninth inning of a tie game, that one bad hop can lose the game. So I know people love to say, oh, I'm going to get like my ace ground baller to be my closer. Zach Britton's a good example of this. Yes, he got ground balls, absolutely. But peak Zach Britton also missed bats, right? That's part of what made him great, is that he could do both of those things. And I would love to see someone in there where you can call on him and say, I need someone to get a strikeout right now. And I look at the Yankees bullpen. I'm not entirely sure who that is. I think Holmes is underrated. I think Holmes is great. I think he's a top 10 guy. But I kind of look up and down. And this was true as of a day or two ago, so don't fact check me on it right this second. I was looking at what Yankee relievers had thrown the most innings. And so Weaver was number one because he's more of a long man type. I'm pretty sure that Dennis Santana was top three, which kind of blew my mind a little bit. No disrespect to Dennis Santana. I like him, but he's been around. bunch of organizations the last couple of years. And it's like, that's, you need to find someone to help in the bullpen. And I know that's not a hot take, right? Contending team needs reliever at the deadline. Every team will tell you that. But, you know, I'm a little surprised that you're not getting more out of like Victor Gonzalez, who I liked a lot with the Dodgers, Ferguson as well. Marinaccio is not really getting the job done. So they're going to need to make some moves in the bullpen.
As of now, Santana is fourth in bullpen usage. It's Weaver, Hamilton, Holmes, and then Santana.
Hamilton. I forgot him. Yeah.
Yeah. He and Hamilton has looked very shaky. He wasn't available in one of the games in Milwaukee this past weekend with general soreness, but I feel like for like the last six or seven of his appearances, he just hasn't looked the same. So Randy and I have talked about it, I feel like every episode now, but they're going to have to address the bullpen at some point, whether that's internal additions with calling some guys up in AAA, Clayton Beater, whoever it might be. And then they have some guys who are injured, Scott Efros, Tommy Canley, Lou Trevino, who are expected back later this summer. So we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, again, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but it's not the same level of bullpen that we've come to expect with the Yankees. And one of the guys who may end up in the bullpen, who I wanted to ask you about, is Luis Gil. He's kind of been a Statcast darling. You know, when you look at his page, it's like all red. You know, he pitched yesterday against the Orioles, looked awesome. I think it was his best outing as a Yankee, in my opinion. What have you thought of him so far? And I know he's added a changeup this year, and his changeup combined with his fastball have basically made him unhittable. But I'm curious to see what the Yankees are going to do when Gerrit Cole comes back, because it feels like Gil is the likeliest candidate to go back to the bullpen. And if we're talking about the lack of swing and miss, he is someone who can certainly change that outlook tremendously, because he misses bats. If there's one thing that he does at an elite level, it's miss bats. But what have you thought of what you've seen out of Luis Gil so far?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that start last night. I watched him a couple starts ago against, I want to say, the Blue Jays, I think. And I mean, you're right. He misses bats better than any other Yankee right now. But, you know, the walk rate is hugely concerning. I think I heard them say on the broadcast last night, he had like the third highest walks per nine of any qualified pitcher. That's concerning more than a little bit, right? That is a tough rope to walk. But, you know, I think you're right that when Cole comes back, he would probably be the man to go. But I also think we are a month at least from Gerrit Cole coming back, you know, so much could change by then. And really, if you're in a situation where there's not room in the rotation for Luis Gil, that's a good problem to have. Maybe they would use a six-man rotation, I don't know. But the question for me would be this: if he's not going to be in the rotation, because you're going to go with a five-man rotation and Cole's back, do you send him to the bullpen for exactly the reasons you just outlined, or do you try to keep him stretched out as a starter? I guess I haven't looked and see if he has options left, but I assume he probably does. And, you know, do you send him back to AAA to keep him stretched out? He's had his own arm surgery to keep innings off his arm. I don't really know the answer to that, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the path they took more than just putting him in the bullpen, at least until we see what kind of moves they make or who else might get injured along the way.
So I know you have to go soon, but I wanted to bring up this one guy who I mentioned a little bit earlier, and you briefly touched on him, but Clay Holmes. Part of it is obviously the legacy of Mariano Rivera and the sky high expectations for anyone that is a Yankees closer. But what are your impressions of Clay Holmes, not just this year, but his tenure with the Yankees? I think he's been extremely effective. I know he has moments where he loses his command. He's not the biggest strikeout guy. So there's moments where, you know, there's going to be contact and you're relying on your infield defense, which isn't always ideal for a closer. But he feels so elite at a couple things that, you know, he mitigates a lot as well. So what are your impressions of Clay Holmes this season, his overall Yankees tenure, and how important of a piece is he for this overall Yankees team?
I think that when the time finally comes that Brian Cashman is no longer running the Yankees and we look back at his, you know, 74-year tenure running the team or whatever it's going to be, the trade for Holmes is going to be one of the five best moves he's made, right? Like, that was, I think things have changed a little bit, but that was one of the trades where it's like, okay, we traded for a talented guy on a team that seems a little behind the times, and we're going to help him improve. And like, they did that, right? That was what the Yankees have done for a number of years. So, you know, credit to Cashman for making the moves for the player development team, for helping him, and to Holmes himself, obviously. And I looked up this morning, 16 strikeouts and one walk, right? And he gets grounders, and, you know, he's using the slider and the sweeper, which he does have two different pitches. I know nobody wants to admit that, but he does, and the sinker also. So he fits a different profile than you expect, like out of the bullpen. You know, you think of who's my closer. He's going to be 6'4", and he's going to throw 102 miles an hour. And yes, they should trade for Mason Miller, probably, like every team. But I think yes, Clay Holmes should. Also, this is more of an A's comment than a Yankees comment. The A's have played surprisingly well. I would trade him yesterday, right? They are so far away from contending. If they don't trust him to be a starter, trade him for a million pieces because they would get so much for him. That's a diversion. As far as Holmes goes, yeah, he doesn't fit like that profile you want. And I could totally see the argument where you get this like fire-breathing flamethrower and say, okay, new guy, you're my closer. Clay Holmes, you are my Andrew Miller-ish weapon for when I need you, because I know you can get me a ground ball or strike out, or at least prevent hard contact. They don't have that right now, I don't think. But I really do think if they got someone else, then you could really free up Holmes to be even more valuable, because I think I'm with you. I know he's had some rough stretches here and there. I rate him, like every year we do our top 10 lists at every position. I'm pretty sure I've had him on my top 10 reliever list like every year since he's gotten to the Yankees. And I do feel like he's underrated. I feel like maybe because he's not striking out like Josh Hader levels of batters, he doesn't get the same kind of respect, but I think that's wrong. I think he's fantastic.
Cool. Well, Mike, we appreciate you joining us and giving us so much great insight. It's great to have people on that are really connected to the metrics and the data, who can help us navigate what we're seeing and some of the things that we're looking up. So we greatly appreciate you having on the show and hope that you can come back later on in the season.
Yeah, Chris, Randy, thanks for having me. Let me leave you with a little teaser here. In a couple weeks at Baseball Savant, we're going to launch a lot of the bat tracking data that people have been talking about.
Nice.
And, thank you.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. I will tell you, Giancarlo Stanton is number one. I know he's not had like a great year. It's like, you know, you can throw 100 miles an hour on the mound and not necessarily be an elite pitcher. It's sort of the same idea. But yeah, he's going to be there at number one. So I think that'll be pretty fun.
Nice.
When you
nice.
Say that's bat tracking data, is that like bat speed and like swing pass or?
So yeah, bat speed, like squared up, a couple other things. So there's so much that we're not going to put it all up at once because it would be overwhelming. So the attack angle and bat path, that will come maybe later on this season, but enough to get people started on. And I hope people dig it because I think it's going to be pretty fun. And I can tell you, we've already mapped out like 2 solid weeks of content because there's just so much to talk about with this. So I'm looking forward to it.
That's very exciting because actually I brought that up to Chris on an episode or two ago. And I was like, I wish that there was something to look at to really like analyze swings. And I brought up attack angle and all that stuff. So I'm very excited. And I'm not surprised that Stanton is at the top.
Yeah, just as far as swing speed, only downside here is we won't have past years to compare it to. It'll start in 2024 and go forward. So much as I'd like to tell you, like, I don't know what George Springer did 10 years ago, I just can't right now, but it'll be fun as time goes on.
That's awesome. We're definitely going to look forward to that and jump into that. So, Mike, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. And Chris and I will be back right after this break. And we're back. Thank you again to Mike Petriello. That was fantastic. I hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. And we have a couple minutes left on this episode, and we're going to do something a little different. We don't normally do this. We try to stay away from it as much as we can. I might have had one of these like briefly for something in one of the episodes. But Chris has his rant, or a rant, that he wants to get off his chest. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that is so annoying to me, and I think it's, you know, Yankee fans are very passionate, and I have a lot of, you know, people responding to me on Twitter about the offense and stuff like that, and, you know, a lot of people are saying, like, the offense is bad, and, you know, I think the other day when they got shut out, you know, people are saying this offense stinks, and it's like, they... how can you stink if the stats say you're top five? It makes no sense. I don't know if people just can't read or they're just choosing not to like look at the stats. It's so annoying to me that people are like responding like, oh, like the offense is not good. It's 2023 plus Soto. It's like, it's not. It's just not the case at all. It's ridiculous to me that people are just like constantly saying this. Like, are they inconsistent? I think that's a fair thing to say. But to say that they're bad, like in what area are they bad? I mean, you know, we mentioned it with Mike, but offense is down across the league so far. And in regards to where the offense is across the league, the Yankees are one of the best teams in the sport. Yes, they've gotten shut out five times. Yes, Aaron Judge has been, you know, having a slow start. Gleyber Torres, we talked about him a bunch. You know, he hasn't been good at all. But just to outwardly say the offense is bad, like, can you stop? It's so annoying. Like, they're not the Rockies. They're not the White Sox. Like, this is a good offense. And it needed to be said. It's annoying to constantly see just on my timeline, like, how bad the offense is and how bad this team is. It's like, they're a good team. They have 20 wins. They didn't win 20 games out of pure luck. Like, they're winning games because they're hitting well and pitching well. Yes, there have been games that haven't gone the way that, you know, fans expect, but that's baseball. And a one-game sample size out of 162, and you're up in arms over, it's like, my God, can everybody just take a chill pill for 2 seconds? That's what I wanted to say.
Well said. And my only thing, and I keep saying it, is the frustration with the 2023 plus Soto thing. There is not the same team. I mean, it's like literally not the same team. It's not just Soto. They added so many different pieces. The bullpen's not the same. The lineup's not the same. Gerrit Cole's not there. The two best hitters from 2023 are like either inconsistent or woefully underperforming in Judge and Gleyber. It's just not, I think fans, Yankees fans, I love interacting with Yankees fans, even when we disagree. Some people like get close to that line of like being disrespectful, but whatever, who cares? I don't know any of these people. It's fine. It's not that big of a deal. And I share the passion. I appreciate the passion. And I love having those discussions. So this is not meant to come across as a negative, but I genuinely believe people need to let 2022 and 2023 go. It's okay. It happened. It sucked. They didn't win a championship. That's basically what happened. It's all right. It's 2024. They're a good team. They're developing into a legitimate title contender. They're off to a really good start. They don't have their ace. Judge isn't hitting it the way we would expect. Labor's not hitting at all. They have a young catcher that's hitting the daylight out of the ball with like no results yet. So there's a chance that that turns around. Verdugo has been a great addition so far. Like, there's Rodon is bouncing back. You have a great closer. There's a lot of positive things to focus on. And we don't need to, I'm saying generally we, because I know it's a lot of people that don't do this as well. But I don't think the default needs to be, oh, this is horrible. And this is just like we saw last year, just because they lost a game. You know, it's okay. Like, they're going to lose a game. Yeah. And they're not losing it. They're not even losing the games like 2023. They're just not getting a big hit. You know, there's a lot of people on base. Last year, they were boring. They were terrible. There was nothing to look at. There was nothing to look at. Awful. Like, the Yankees have every game, they have a chance to win it. It's just because they don't get a big hit or there's some weird defensive play. Or in the case of this Orioles series, the Orioles make a great defensive play that prevents you from scoring 2 runs and winning the game. They're infinitely more fun and interesting to watch. It's not 2023. That team stunk. And I thought going into that season that they were going to be good. You know, I'm always positive and optimistic. But by the trade deadline, I was like, this team is garbage, like everybody else thinks. They were just bad. They were boring. They didn't have good players. it's not the same. Like, it's okay. It's going to be good. And it's going to be a good season.
And here's how they're not 2023. Last year, they had four hitters who were at or above league average in WRC+. That's Judge, Torres, LeMahieu, and Rizzo. And in LeMahieu's and Rizzo's case, they were awful for large stretches of the season. Rizzo was at 100 WRC+, which means he was directly league average, and LeMahieu was at 101. So he was 1% better than the average major league hitter. So they had two guys last year, essentially, who were, you know, well above average, and Judge and Torres. And Judge obviously missed a bunch of time. This year, they have eight hitters who are above league average. That's Juan Soto, Alex Verdugo, Anthony Volpe, Jose Trevino, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, Anthony Rizzo, Oswaldo Cabrera. And that doesn't even mention Austin Wells, who we've talked about several times, and you just mentioned him. He's been hitting the crap out of the ball, and I think he's going to end up being an above average major league hitter. So we're talking about potentially almost the entire lineup. All the regulars are at or above league average. That was never the case last year. Never. We just talked about how boring, how painfully boring last year was. That's just not the case this year. I mean, they're in every single game, literally every single game. And you can't be a bad team and have a chance to win literally every single game. Just because they hit into a double play and it's bases loaded, it doesn't mean they stink. It's just baseball. That's just how it is. You can't hit home runs every time you get into the box. You can't get an RBI every time you get into the box. I just feel like there's a segment of fans who like genuinely believe that, and it's an indictment on the entire organization when it doesn't happen. So I would just tell those fans just like, relax. Like Mitchell Robinson said to the longtime New York Post reporter, Mark Berman, relax. It's one game of 162. Relax. This team is going to, I think this team is going to be fine.
Oh, well, everybody knows how I feel. I think they're winning the World Series. So
I'm not there. I'm not at that point.
I'm totally being a fan here. Like when I say that, I'm biased. I'm not picking anybody else. I'm telling everybody why I'm picking the Yankees. I do think that they're if they're not yet, because it's too early, but I do think that they will grow into a legitimate title contender with a few other teams. Like I do believe that firmly. The other stuff is just being like a biased fan that's just gonna say stuff. Mm-hmm.
No, I agree. And it's also important to note that like the American League feels open this
year.
Not
good. Yeah.
You know, the Astros are in last place right now. They're 10-20. That's a pretty steep hill to climb out of. I know obviously it's early, but you know, being 10 games under 500, that's a long way to go to get back to where you want to be. You look in the Central Division. The Central Division is outperforming, I think, expectations across the board. Should the Yankees be worried about any of those teams? I don't think so. You know, the Guardians have been one of the best teams in the sport. I'm not really impressed with the Guardians as a whole. I mean, they've been good. I think the Yankees, at least on paper, should beat them if they were to line up against them in a playoff series. I mean, it's obviously the Orioles who you have to be concerned about. They have a ton of young talent in the pipeline already on the major league roster. You know, they have so much capital that they could trade if they wanted to add two starting pitchers or whatever. Right. Like they have so much that they can trade to make moves. So that's the one team that, you know, the Yankees probably have to watch out for it in the American League as of right now. Obviously things can change, but you know, I think the Yankees are certainly one of the teams that will be in the mix to win it all. Do I think they are going to win it all right now? No. And also I wanted to say this. It's like, I've seen some people say, oh, like you're copping for the organization, or, you know, you must be on the payroll. It's like, If you read any of my stories last year, I was killing them like every single day. If there's one thing I will do, I will tell it how I feel. If I feel like the team is good, I will say the team is good. If I feel like the team is bad, I have no problem saying that. And no one is going to stop me. Jason Zillow's not going to stop me. The PR director, Aaron Boone's not going to stop me. Brian Cashman's not going to stop me. None of these guys are going to stop how I feel about the team. And I'm going to write what I'm seeing. I'm going to write fairly. Last year, they stunk. And I said it basically every single day that they sucked. And I said it from like May. And it's not going to stop. This year, they're playing well. So I'm going to write they're playing well. That's just the reality of the situation. So I also had to say that because I feel like it's ridiculous how people are like, oh, like you're now on the Yankee payroll and you know, Ryan Cashman's on like has me under his thumb. Like, no, like I'm going to write what I feel is necessary. So I also had to get that off my chest.
Oh yeah. I've had that one before. I won't give this person any dignity, but, a certain journalist, if I will put that description in, or I'll put that job title in quotes. I remember one time saying, I should work for Brian Cashman, or I am working for Brian Cashman. Cause like I said one positive thing about like IKF or something. And it wasn't even then, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I appreciate the passion, but like,
oh yeah, the passion's great.
But I think at some point, like there has to be some like rationality. Like Chris does not work for the Yankees. I don't work. I certainly don't work for the Yankees. So yeah, I mean, I always think all those comments are like funny to me, like because it's so extreme that it like is entertaining. But yeah, we don't work for the Yankees. Just to put that out there. So you mentioned the Orioles. Let's talk a little bit about the Orioles really quickly, and then we'll get to our mailbag question. Then we'll wrap up. We said this on the last episode that this was basically going to be a litmus test primarily for the Yankees starters. And through three games, I've been really impressed with the Yankees pitching overall against the Orioles, but especially the starters. And I know James Smythe from the Yes Network had brought this stat up. And I think one other person, and I apologize for not knowing who also said this off the top of my head. But the Orioles in this series, Jack Curry also, and I'm sure he got this from James. The Orioles offense has been terrible against fastballs 95 plus from the Yankees in this series. And I don't know enough about the Orioles and their trends so far to say that this is something that they've encountered so far in their season, if this is going to be one of their major flaws going forward. But they're basically hitting like Giancarlo Stanton against elite fastballs. And Rodon pitches today, obviously has a very good fastball velocity wise. The Orioles offense has not been impressive in this series through three games. They've had one home run from Gunnar Henderson. They had the double from McCann. And then the rest of their runs have basically come from bloops or seeing eye hits. And it's not like every inning in this series, it felt like there was a threat that the Yankees had to navigate their way through. It feels like a lot of innings where maybe a hit here or there, but they've been pretty, pretty impressive, as has the Orioles staff against the Yankees lineup, to be fair. But in the context of the Yankees starting pitching, how do you think they've done in this series? And what do you think about the Orioles' potential flaw as a lineup going up against high velocity?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it when, you know, we've discussed Stanton in the past. But if you can't hit high velocity pitches, it's going to be a problem for you just because of the fact that velocity is going up across the league. And, you know, I feel like every bullpen now is just a cascade of guys throwing 98 with ridiculous sliders and sweepers. So It certainly could be a flaw for them. You know, I pulled it up when you were talking. Right now, they are hitting 175 against fastballs. They have a 208 fastballs over 95. They have a 208 on base and they're slugging 217. The only team that they're better than against high velocity is the White Sox, which isn't saying much. You don't want to be anywhere near the White Sox because they're a single A team. Yeah. It's certainly concerning. Along the same lines, the Yankees, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They're 11th in batting average against 95 and higher. They're on base 338, slugging 351. Not terrible, but again, you know, they're right in the middle of the league in hitting 95 and higher, which is good. To get back to the pitching staff, I think they've been spectacular, honestly. You know, Nestor gives up 4 runs, and the 4 runs that he gave up, there was a ball hit down the right field line. Soto probably should have caught that ball. Rizzo's like 150 feet in the right field. Yeah. I don't know why. Soto has to call that off. You know, that's a double. Then they had, I think, 2 infield singles in that inning. They had a bloop single. So it wasn't like Nestor was just like, wow, this guy's off. They were just hitting the ball in the right spots. Clark Schmidt.
That runner that Soto led on, basically, that also was the same runner, I think, where Glaber threw to third.
Oh, yes.
Instead of going to first. I understand what he was doing, but he had no angle, so that was also like a bad defensive play that led to a run.
Yeah, that was a bad decision. Also, to get, I think it was Mountcastle who was running the third on that play, but to get him out there, like, he would have had to make a perfect throw. It wasn't like he was going to be out by 15 feet. So I didn't really get that decision on Glaber's part. But yeah, I mean, the starters have been really, really good. This is a good offense. I think right now the Orioles are a top 3 offense in the sport as a whole. And to have Nestor, Clark, and Heal perform the way they have, you know, you're talking about guys who may be 3 or 4 in your playoff rotation. And to, you know, have this experience to show that, like, there's some depth, there's some quality depth in the starting rotation, I think is very encouraging so far. I'm very curious to see how Carlos looks in an hour. You know, he looked good against the Brewers, but this is by far the most challenging test that he'll have so far in the season. If he looks good, then I feel like it's time to maybe not have the concern level that we might have with Carlos, because if he shuts down the Orioles today, you know, I think we're talking about someone who is a good, legitimate starting pitcher who you can have at the top of your rotation.
Yeah, for sure. So there's one more thing about the Orioles that I wanted to bring up briefly, and it's something that I thought about but didn't really want to say until we saw them play. And I don't know how much value we can put into this, but I feel like for championship contenders, it's brought up a lot. And that's having kind of that veteran position player that maybe doesn't anchor a lineup, but is like a dependable veteran that adds value to a team of young players that's ascending. So I think of someone like Brian McCann and Carlos Beltran on the Astros. And I know that those names and the Astros lead to very obvious things, but I just want to put that to the side. Like, we know what Carlos Beltran's contribution was to that Astros team, and it's nefarious and not great. But also, I think beyond that, there was value. Brian McCann, I think, was a very reliable player for them in 2017, had the big hit against the Yankees. We're going to put all the allegation stuff to the side when we have this conversation. But I feel like when I look at this Baltimore team, they don't have that guy. Like, all their veterans are guys that came up through the Orioles organization that know nothing but losing outside of last year. So you look at Santander, you look at Mullins, they're not guys that have an extensive history of winning. And it feels like, again, I don't know how much value you can put into this, but it feels like it's important when you look at championship level teams. They don't really have that veteran or outside veteran that fills that role for these young guys. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just a bunch of really talented young guys that are figuring all out together, but there isn't someone that could sit there in the locker room every day and say, you have to do X, Y, and Z to be a winner, to like take that next step. So I'm curious, as the season goes on, you talked about trades. Do they bring in somebody? Is that something that they target? I think they have that. I don't even know if they have that on the pitching side, because it's not like Corbin Burns has won a ton himself. So I'm very curious. But he's great. He's an ace. He's awesome. Not to say that he isn't. But I'm very curious like how that will play out with the Orioles, and if that's something that they think they need to like move forward to go after the title.
You know who is available for them that they can pick up?
Who's that?
Aaron Hicks. Orioles legend.
Orioles legend Aaron Hicks.
They spoke highly of him when, you know, the Yankees DFA'd him last season, and you know, I think he provided some veteran leadership there. But obviously that I'm joking here, but
he should be on a golf course, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I think his career might be over. But when we talk about like veteran leadership, I don't know how much I put into that. You know, I'm watching the NBA playoffs, and you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder are like all under 25 years old and they look awesome. You know, they're led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who I think is like 23 or 24. Chet Holmgren is like 20, 21. Jalen Williams, like it's just a bunch of young guys. So, and I think the Thunder are one of the teams who could certainly win the NBA title.
Right.
I just don't know.
Even with that example, I think let's use that as an example. I think if they play Denver, they don't win that series. And I know that they won the season series, but it just feels like in talking to people and like executives and just like over time, we can't quantify it. So I think your point is like well taken. It's certainly valid. It just feels like when we talk about the human side of things, that always seems to be like one element in these championship teams, generally speaking. And of course it might be outliers. But even if you look at a team, I mean, I guess you could look at the Nationals when they won. I can't remember everybody on that roster, but it felt like, I mean, they had Max Scherzer. You know what I mean?
Well, they had Howie Kendrick was
right. Yeah. Exactly.
Ryan Zimmerman was older.
Right. And Howie Kendrick was like a major piece in that run. You know what I mean? So it's just like, I don't know. I'm not saying that that's like the key piece for the Orioles, but it's just something that I noticed that they just lack. They just don't have that guy yet. Yeah, I'm curious if they think that that's important for them.
Yeah. I'd be interested. The one thing I would say is like, it shouldn't be, you have to subtract one of your good
agreed
young players to just get this veteran who it may be out there, may not be out there.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. It has to fit. So like it can't just be some old head who is like on the downside of his career and you're getting him just because, you know, he's good in the locker room and and like he can mentor younger players. Like it has to make sense for the Orioles.
Yeah.
And again, like we just talked about, they have so much that they can trade.
Right. So
they can like get literally anybody in the sport with how much talent they have. That's why I think they're so dangerous.
I agree. And I definitely mean somebody that can contribute. Like, I don't mean somebody that's like, come over here, young man, and sit on my lap and let me tell you about the good old days. You know what I mean? So, I mean, someone that can actually play, like Howie Kendrick, I think is a good example, like that can make a difference for them. I'm just curious. It was just a thought that I had that I'm curious to see if they put value into that at some point. All right. So let's wrap up with the podcast question or mailbag question that we got from Joseph Figueroa. Really love the podcast. You guys quickly became my go-to Yankees podcast. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. I definitely was going to read that part of the email. I have a hot take that may not be so hot at this point, but I think Clark Schmidt and Luis Gil have been the two best starters so far for the Yankees this season. I realize that both have had limited efficiency past the fifth inning or the third time around the batting order, and Rodon's stats at this point might technically be better, but I would love to hear your opinion as to how hot my take is at this point. What do you think?
I think Heal has the most special stuff out of all of them. And, you know, what Mike was saying earlier about just like his command has to get better. I think yesterday against Baltimore was a really good sign. I know Aaron Boone talked after the game about how they tweaked some of his mechanics in the past couple of starts. You know, maybe that's the secret for him, and maybe he has figured it out moving forward. If he can get his command in check, I mean, he has the talent to be almost as good as Gerrit Cole. Like, I'm not even saying that as a hot take.
Right.
Like, he can't, like, no one can hit his fastball and no one can hit his changeup. And he only has to throw those two pitches because they are unhittable. Even when he's in the zone, like, they can't hit him. So, right. I certainly like can see like your point that you're making here with Clark. I mean, Clark is, I feel, very underrated. Like you know, you're getting five innings from Clark and he's probably going to give up three or fewer runs, which is very, you know, effective. I know some older baseball fans are probably, he can't pitch seven innings. Like, get him out of here. But like, that's just baseball now. Like, if you're a starting pitcher and you get five innings, like, you did your job, and that's what you're going to get with Clark. Obviously his next step moving forward is providing more length, because you do want more length, but it's not like that big of an issue right now. I wouldn't say he's been like the number one or number two starters for the Yankees. I mean, it has to be Carlos. And I think Nestor, just what he's done so far, I think has been impressive. He's not, you know, 2022 Nestor Cortez, but, you know, I think he's bounced back very nicely. And some of the underlying metrics are favorable for Nestor. So those would be my two picks for who've been the best two starters for the Yankees. I would have said Marcus Stroman, but he's been pretty shaky now for like the last three or four outings he's had. Like, his command has just been off. But if he can lock back in, you know, I think Marcus has the potential to be one of the team's best starters, but, you know, he hasn't looked that good in the past few outings.
Yeah. I don't think it's a hot take, but I think Carlos has been their best pitcher. Even with the lack of swing and miss or the decline in swing and miss, it very could well just come down to something that Mike said, that, you know, he's just trying to get more contact and he's just trying to get through at bats quicker than he has in the past. He might have just evolved as a pitcher. You know, we're seeing that happen in real time. So if that's the case, I mean, yeah, you want the swing and miss, but I mean, if he's getting outs, that's the whole point of the job. So I think part of it with Carlos is kind of measuring him against what he was in the past. And it could be just a situation where he's changed his approach. You know, he's 2 years older. People started to lock in on the fastball slider combo, and he's realizing that he needs to add something to his arsenal to induce some contact and weak contact. And maybe that's what we're watching here. And that explains, you know, the lack of swing and miss. But I think Carlos has been their best pitcher for sure. And I agree. I think Nestor has been their second best pitcher, and we had questions about Nestor, and so far he's answering all of them, and that's to his credit. Not that he's pitching to answer questions that we have, but he's done the job and I'm very happy about it. He deserves all the credit. He's performed well. I think that he had bad luck against the Orioles. I thought he pitched really well against them. So Nestor definitely deserves credit and love for how he's been pitching so far. I think he's only had really one bad start. I thought the Cleveland start wasn't very good. And maybe he had one. The Houston start also wasn't very good. But I think overall he's been pretty solid and has done a pretty good job. So thank you for the question. We appreciate it. We always appreciate the mailbag questions. So we're going to wrap up this episode. It was great to have Mike on. Thank you again to him for sharing some time with us. We hope you enjoyed that conversation. Chris, any final words before we get out of here?
No. Watching the Yankees in about 40 minutes. And then tonight I'm going to go to Philly for game six.
Oh, you're going?
Yeah.
Nice. I'm gonna go. So you, yeah. So you weren't prevented from getting a ticket, although the head of Fanatics is trying to buy out the building to keep you guys out of there.
I saw that. No, that did not stop me from getting a ticket. So I will be there. I will be there. Hopefully the arena is just as loud with Knicks fans as it was on Sunday. I mean, it sounded like MSG. I don't know if that's going to be the case tonight, just because the game's at 9 o'clock and the last Amtrak train is at 12:10, which may scare some people off. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. I also don't understand why the game's at 9 o'clock. That is absurd.
I don't understand why that game has precedence. Why the other Eastern Conference series has precedence over this game. That's ridiculous. I mean, nobody's watching that game. We don't care. We don't care.
I really don't get it.
It's Indiana Milwaukee first, right?
Yeah, at 6:30.
We don't care. We don't care about Indiana Milwaukee. Like,
and also really it's like Giannis and Lillard are likely going to be out. So
yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why that game's at 6:30.
I mean, I have no dog in this fight at all. My team stinks. We know that. We don't care about Indiana, Milwaukee. We want to see Knicks Sixers. Like, you know, that's entertaining. That's what we want to see. Like, we don't need
literally all the games have been good.
Yeah, no, it's been the best series. That and the Dallas series with the Clippers. So good luck to your guys tonight. I hope they lose and we go to game seven. And that's all I have to say about that. But yeah, I enjoyed your rant. I agreed with it. We're on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Please give us 5 stars. And if you feel inclined, please drop us a review. We're always open to feedback on how we can make this better, what you like, what you don't like. So we will be back next Tuesday and we'll talk more about the Yankees then. So enjoy the Yankees Orioles game today. Enjoy the series over the weekend. And we will speak to you next week.